Better than this, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't do this shit.
What's better than this? Guys being dudes here on the Draft Dudes podcast, presented by Locked On. It's Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs from the Draft Network, and we are your hosts here on this Tuesday Takes on Takes edition of the show. Kyle, happy Tuesday to you.
Thanks, man. Still trying to catch up on some sleep a little bit after staying up late watching Monday Night Football, but thankfully we didn't come home with a dub. Thought we might have a victory Tuesday on our hands here for a hot second, and didn't turn out that way.
You know, fans want primetime games so badly for their teams. Give me the 1 o'clock. Just give me 1 o'clock on Sunday every week. I don't keep me in the rhythm of my life. You know, I am a creature of habit, so I it's very disruptive to me, and I'm sure it was to you, especially because you have to do some Dolphins coverage for that.
Well, I think the best time slot might be the 4 o'clock.
Think so?
On Sunday. Yeah, because you can still, there's so much happening at 1 o'clock, right? And like, if you're involved at all in fantasy football, or if you like watching Red Zone, like my perfect football day is Red Zone from 1 to 4. My team plays at 4, and then I get to watch a relaxed Sunday night football game.
I think the best thing is to live on the West Coast. Football starts at 10 a.m. Oh, football's no over by like 9, right? You're looking for something to do at the end of the day. But outside of that, I don't know. I kind of like, I guess I can see that because most of the games happen first. So with Red Zone, you can kind of track them all. And then you have like 3, maybe 4 games in the afternoon slate, the 4 o'clock slate. And if your team's one of them,
and
you
if
can
one
just
of them is yours,
on yeah. Yeah. All right, I can vibe out to that.
Okay, that's a good take to start Takes on Takes today, then.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Okay. You get the first one here from Vontel. I think this is more of a question.
All right.
Not counting the Niners, of course, never. What team did you guys predict to be really bad but has pleasantly surprised you this season? What stands out, man? I think we mostly I appreciate Vontel here because we've mostly talked about the teams that we thought would be good that are not. So this is a nice different angle here.
Right. That's the shoes on the other foot now. Yeah. I think we picked Arizona to have the worst record in the NFL.
Really?
I think we picked Arizona to be 2-14 before the season started.
And so they've won 3 games, right?
Yeah, they've already surpassed our win prediction for them.
Good for them. Good for them.
Yeah. The Raiders are okay. I think we predicted the Raiders to go like 4-12 or 5-11.
Yeah.
So they'll be a better football team than what we thought they were going to be.
Yep.
And probably the Detroit Lions would be my third choice.
Yeah, we had them like 5 or 6 wins too, right?
Yeah.
Stafford's playing great.
Again, another team in 3-3. Oh, man, he's playing lights out right now. Yeah. Looks great.
Yeah.
Hope he stays healthy and can finish this year strong. Take from Mr. Thick Boy. The Patriots are great, but when it comes to player acquisition, the Patriots are great when it comes to player acquisition because they do the obvious things. Everyone really thinks they play chess, but they really play checkers. Winovich in the 3rd round, Antonio Brown signing, Mohamed Sanu trade, Stephon Gilmore signing as examples.
I don't think the Patriots are great at player acquisition. I really don't. I think that if you look at their draft history, it's not good. It's not better than any other teams. What the Patriots do better than everyone else is, first of all, have Tom Brady as its quarterback. And number two, they game plan and scheme and play situational football at a high level where it hasn't mattered as much who their personnel is. So the reasons why we should praise the Patriots are for having the greatest quarterback of all time and for finding out what players do best and putting him in those roles continuously for a long period of time. And it's not so much roster construction. It's really not. Do you agree with that? I mean, I don't think they've been great at building their roster. They've been good at it.
I think they're not afraid to swing the bat.
Because they can.
But I think
right?
they should be. Right. But I think they should be applauded for that because a lot of teams don't even try and make some of these acquisitions. Like, what did they trade for Kyle Van Noy?
Yeah, that was peanuts.
peanuts. And it was like, okay, former high draft pick, let's see what he's got. It comes in and it works, but you don't know unless you swing the bat. And the Patriots for so long have been a team that are very fluid with, they have a lot of draft capital. They have a little draft capital. They're not afraid to spend in free agency. They proactively get rid of guys ahead of their contract. So it gives them more capital to have more flexibility. Like, I think there is some kind of systemic philosophy here that is just a little bit different, but it allows them to make the moves that other teams aren't really in the position to do. Some of the examples that he provided as far as the Mohamed Sanu trade or Stephon Gilmore signing or AB signing.
Okay.
It's for me.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Hook me up.
Yeah,
hook
thanks.
Me up. Come on.
The Sports Nut. What's up, dude? Maybe an old one, but needs repeating. The Miami Dolphins will not pass on Chase Young with their first pick, then worry about the quarterback position with all the other ammo they've built up.
I don't think you go through what you're going through to draft Chase Young. Even if Chase Young is the best football player, which right now he looks like he is the best football player in the draft, the Dolphins have openly made a public mission statement in 2020 to acquire a franchise quarterback. Doesn't look like that Steelers pick is going to be all that high in the draft order when you look at they play the Colts and then the Rams the next 2 weeks. And then they play two teams or three teams combined that have like four wins right now.
So they'll be middle of the first round.
They'll be middle of the first round. And Houston, you know, unless they collapse and the Colts make a run, Houston's going to be outside the top 20 picks. I really don't think you can bank on picks 15 and 24 or 26 to go get you Joe Burrow or Tua Tagovailoa. You have to get the quarterback first. That's what they publicly declared their intent is this offseason. That's why they are going through the growing pains that they are. So you can make a case for Chase Young being the best player available, but I don't think you have any realistic chance that the Dolphins decide, you know what, we'll take the chance, and if Jordan Love's there at 15, we'll take Jordan Love instead. They want to have the pick of the litter. Take from Manuel. The 2020 offensive tackle class is low-key shaping up to be another position of strength. Not only do you have quality first-rounders in Thomas, Wirfs, and Leatherwood, but you have guys like Austin Jackson, Lucas Niang, who's now out for the year, Prince Tagawanahu, and Jedrick Wills should be a very good value on day two.
Yeah, it's a good take. I think you just listed, what is that, like six or seven names there that I think are, you know, first two round players that look like starters to me. Have really been excited to see Jedrick Wills really emerge in this class. Like you mentioned, Austin Jackson from USC, a guy that emerged. So I think you've got some guys you can look at and say, you've got starting caliber guys. What I'm really anxious to do is look into some of the depth of this class, because there's a lot of names that seem appealing, whether it's Liam Eichenberg or Calvin Throckmorton, Charlie Heck, Ezra Cleveland, Scott France, Cole Van Land, and Kakeem Adeniji. I mean, I think there's a long list of like interesting guys where you don't feel like, man, you better get one of these top two or three because it's a bunch of, you know, it's a bunch of crap after that. I think this is a good offensive tackle year because, which is a good thing because, man, the need could not be greater in the NFL right now for good offensive tackles.
Joe. And,
yeah.
Joe.
What? Yeah.
Joe, real quick. I wanted to cut you off before we do our first sponsor read for the day.
Okay.
Related to this take. Who's the best offensive tackle in Alabama?
Maybe Wills, Kyle. Maybe Wills.
I think it's Jedrick Wills. I do. And we are due, fun fact, because the end of this week is November. Joe, you and I are releasing our November position rankings and big board on Tuesday or on Saturday.
See?
This weekend.
Yeah.
So name your three top offensive tackles.
My top
name three top offensive tackles.
Yeah. Thomas, right Wirfs, Thomas Wirfs, and I don't know. I have a couple days to decide that. What about you? Who's three? Are you going to do something funky with those top two?
Or Andrew just Thomas might be three.
Oh, please.
I don't know, man. The more I watch him, the more I think he's a scheme-specific offensive tackle. This was the strife I was hoping to cause. We'll let it linger there, but Andrew Thomas might be my third offensive, like still top 20 player, top 25 player. But I think he's a little bit more scheme specific than some of these other guys.
Peloton is offering a limited time offer. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use promo code LOCKED to get started.
Are we okay to continue, or are your feelings hurt?
No, just, you know, Kyle, I feel like you're overthinking it.
I don't think I am. Well, listen, why don't you and me grind some tape together, and I'll express my concerns.
Next one comes from Joe.
The Falcons rebuild is going to take at least 2 years. They're going to have to release some big contracts to even have cap space, which then leads to more holes.
Yeah, Falcons are in trouble a little bit. We like them coming into this year, but things are not going well. It's going to cause some changes. And I think we looked into this. They have like negative cap space right now projected for 2020. Ugh. That's going to be a problem. They're going to have
negative,
to rework
negative some- 8 million in cap space. Yeah.
So it's going to be challenging. Right now, they can't sign a draft class, let alone add to the roster. So, I mean, you look, so how do you improve, right? You think maybe new coaching, leadership scheme, health, right? We've said that now for a couple years, will help. I mean, you count on some young players, the offensive lineman, Caleb McGarry, Chris Lindstrom coming back and being healthy and positive contributors for you, but you have holes on the defensive line everywhere. You know, Austin Hooper's a free agent and he's been a good player for you. You don't have any money to sign him. You're going to have to maybe move on from Desmond Trufant just to get some cash back into the mix. It's going to be challenging here. And I think they're going to have to take a step back, another step back before they can take one forward, just kind of looking at things right now, because I think it's going to be challenging to make a big switch here. But sometimes coaches, I mean, you can see them come in and make a big change and a big impact right away, and maybe they catch fire. They've got a good quarterback in Matt Ryan, and they have, you know, they have Julio Jones, they have Calvin Ridley, and they have an offensive line in place. But defensively, it's going to be a big shift, and it's going to be creating some holes and filling it with some guesses, to be completely honest with you. All right, here's one from Sam, Kyle. The Bills and Jets will end the season with the same record of 9-7.
Nah, this ain't it.
Jets ain't getting the 9 wins.
Jets are going to have to go 8-1 the rest of the way. Listen, I get you guys play the Dolphins twice, New York, but you ain't playing the Dolphins 9 times. There's no way this team loses one game the rest of the year.
Are the Jets getting to 5 wins? I think is a better question.
No. They might not get the 4. This team is horrible, Joe. They just said CJ Mosley's going to be out like another month and a half.
Yeah.
They can't block for anybody. Darnold looks terrible. Can we talk low-key how savage the Jacksonville Jaguars were for dressing their mascot up as a ghost? And having him like zip line into the stadium from the rafters?
Gamesmanship.
Playing the Ghostbusters theme.
Who signs off on something like that? You know,
I don't know, but they deserve a raise, man.
Like, what's the process for coming up with that? And is it one of those things you just do it and ask for forgiveness if you get in trouble? Or do you have to like clear that with somebody?
Yeah, I wonder how high up the ladder that one goes.
Just the, did you see the guy is.
Did you see both the Steelers and Dolphins decline to wear mics last night?
I did not see that, man.
They said, nah, no thanks. You're not throwing us under the bus.
Well, so that's going to be, I don't know. I'm going to watch Monday Night Football regardless if there's a mic'd up piece of it or not. Right. It doesn't matter.
Right. No, I don't care. But I have a hard time figuring, unless they change like some of the written agreements as to yeah. what that looks like. I think they're going to have a hard time getting anybody to wear mics.
Well, who's responsible for that? Is there a PR guy within the organization that they could say, hey, this guy, representative of the team, has to approve anything that's aired during the broadcast? I guess. I don't know. Is that
it could just be we probably not. And I have a hard time seeing that be a thing, because now you got to have somebody as your organization as effectively a part of the production team for ESPN.
Yeah. That guy's worrying about how his coach and players need to answer questions after the game, not whether or not this 15-second sound clip is going to be appropriate for the broadcast.
So, no, I think ESPN just kind of has to rewrite their agreement as far as the context of things that they're allowed to take and so on and so forth.
I think this one's mine.
It is. I'm just paying you back for making me wait for mine. Thanks. This is take from Jared. If Isaiah Simmons continues to play at the level he is, he will be considered by many around draft Twitter as a top 5 to 10 prospect in 2020.
Are we not here already? Where
yeah, we're here. No, we're here. We're here.
Okay. I'm making sure. Like if there's people out there that don't like Isaiah Simmons and don't think he's like a top 10 prospect, I need to hear from them, and I need to understand why, because we're not watching the same player. He's special, man. Rare talent, exactly what the NFL's looking for on the defensive side of the football right now. And definitely a top 10 player in this class. Mark Jarvis. What's up, dude? He says, Derek Brown, Javon Kinlaw, and Neville Gallimore all end up as first-round picks.
Gallimore is such a Patriots pick, it's not even funny.
Right.
And then Kinlaw, put him in Minnesota. Derek Brown, I could see him landing about 5 different spots in the top 15. I'll buy this take. I think this is a very reasonable take.
Is Gallimore the one that gives you a slight hesitation?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because you got to find a spot for him, and there's so many other good players and different needs and stuff.
Yeah, I think he's the one that's on the fringe. I think that the first two at this point are comfortably projecting in the first round. Neville Gallimore, top 40, top 50. It's just a question of, as you said, does team need a line with value there for a certain scheme? And so that'll be the one to watch. Take from Ben Scott. The Bills will move up in the first round to draft CeeDee Lamb if he drops out of the top 10.
Brandon Bean is a trade up guy. So there's always that piece that I think about. They'd have to give up pretty good amount. I mean, I'm guessing they'd have to get into the low teens, move up from probably in low to mid 20s. What does that cost? I mean, that's like the Marcus Davenport trade. Do you think Brandon Bean's going to trade his number one pick in 2021 for CeeDee Lamb? I don't know. I don't think it's a crazy take. I don't think it will happen. That's my prediction.
What do you think of this? What do you make of this Melvin Gordon buzz right now? By the time everybody listens to this, the trade deadline will have passed. But Buffalo being attached to Melvin Gordon.
Do you want me to give you my fan take or like my analyst take?
Your 15-second version of both.
I don't want the Bills to trade for Melvin Gordon. I don't think it's crazy to think Brandon Bean will do it.
Okay.
As a true football fan, you've already know just as sure as the seasons change that Tom Brady will keep the Patriots in the game. Every weekend, our favorite gridiron warriors put their skills to the test, so why aren't you doing the same? We're almost halfway through the NFL season, so now is the time to get on the sidelines and get in the game with MyBookie. MyBookie is the premier place to bet on all your favorite pro and college football action every weekend. They always have the most up-to-date lines and most prop bets of any sports book on the planet. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and bet with the best at MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. Pick your locks for the week, put them together in one parlay bet, and when they all come through, the rewards will be huge. Tired of watching games from the couch with nothing to gain? My bookie wants to get your mind off everything else and back on the game. Best part is right now, my bookie will double your first deposit. That's right. If you put in $1,000, they'll give you $1,000. That's double your initial deposit you can use on all your favorite picks. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, Kyle, here we go. From Doctor, if the Bears took Mahomes instead of Trubisky, they would have easily won the Super Bowl last year and would be serious contenders this year.
Bears supporting cast last year. They still had A-Rob. They still had Anthony Miller.
Defense.
I don't know about easily, but they're not losing to Philly. And then I would say the floor for that team is NFC Championship game.
Against the Saints?
Yeah. Although, with Nagy like that, I like that fit too.
Right. With Vic Fangio in the defense last year, with Adrian Amos.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's very easy to see that materialize if. But you know what they say.
Yeah, ifs and nuts and butts and uncles and aunts.
If ifs and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas.
Oh, okay. All right. There's another one like the one I said, right?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, we're not getting into that one, though. Take from Dion. Nick Bosa is the NFL's most valuable player.
That's strong, man. It's strong. Yeah, I don't know. I think as much as I am for non-quarterbacks being in this discussion, it's hard to get away from them. And Bosa's been unbelievable. He's defensive rookie of the year, top of the list type player for me. MVP of the league? I don't know if I'm there yet. I don't know if I'll get there either. But he's been unbelievable. I'll give him that. Ty Smith. This is interesting. LSU secondary is easily the best in college and debatably the best of all time. Stingley Jr. might be Charles Woodson special.
All right. Well, Stingley's definitely special. Is he Charles Woodson? Did you see Ed Ogeron's said the plan is Stingley's going to play corner as a freshman and a sophomore, and then the plan is his junior year play some wide receiver?
Why? How does that help him?
In addition to, apparently he can do it.
Okay. I mean, maybe for a couple plays or something. I don't know. I guess that's fun.
Yeah. So he's definitely a special player. Is LSU's secondary the best of all time? Jeez.
Are they easily the best right now? Ohio State.
I was just getting ready to come back and say, I don't even know that they're necessarily the best right now. Ohio State's got Sean Wade, Damon Arnett, Jeffrey Okuda. I think Arnett is probably the worst of their trio. LSU having Fulton and Stingley, I think both of their outside guys are better. Well, not both of their outside guys are better than Okuda, but I think that pairing is better than the pairing of Okuda and Arnett, because I don't think Arnett's quite on that level. But Sean Wade is a big difference maker in slot. LSU does have an advantage at safety. I will give them that. So I'd probably lean LSU right now.
Yes.
Ohio State has the better draft eligible talent all around in the secondary. But LSU's got the best secondary right now. Yeah, I'll buy that part of it. Jake Noah, in a loaded wide receiver class, Juwan Jennings is going to be overlooked, but man, I think he'll be good at the next level.
I like Jennings. He's from Tennessee. Really good catch point guy. He got loose vertically a couple times against South Carolina. South Carolina's got some decent corners over there. I don't know if he's got a ton of juice. He's a bigger receiver. And these are always the most challenging, right? Like those big physical receivers that don't have great mobility but make plays in college, and how does that translate to the next level? I think that is, that might be the hardest thing for me to forecast. I don't think he'll be a very high pick. I think he'll be a day three guy. I can see him being productive. I can see him being a niche player. I just have a hard time understanding, like, what's his true ceiling, like, in terms of what, like, how much can he achieve in the NFL as a niche player? I don't think he's going to be like a desired focal point of an NFL passing game, but he can fill a role.
You know what's,
but he's interesting. I mean, he's, you know what's, he's really, really dumb? Good this year. Yeah.
I'd be willing to bet his draft stock, a lot of it just comes down to his 40 ton.
He's going to run like maybe 4.7. 4.6
then he,
guys
then he
for sure.
Won't get drafted. And that's the, like, Mike Evans ran 4.5 flat as a big bodied vertical guy. Mike Williams from US or from Clemson ran like 5.2. Everybody convinced that it was altered, but he ran like 4.52 and he went in the top 10.
Yeah. Calvin Harmon.
Those kind of
4.6 and he goes in the sixth round.
4.6 goes in the sixth round. Yeah. Right? Like, it seems like for the big bodied guys, it's such a big part of it. And then you have DK Metcalf who runs 4.3 and goes in the second round. So, like,
first
granted,
round
there's some medicals there with
DK. First round with no medicals, right? For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just, it's always weird with those big body guys. That kind of resonated with me when you said that.
This is my favorite one today, and I'm glad you're getting it. Ryan Tannehill, guy you're familiar with there, Kyle, will throw for 2,800 yards with 22 touchdowns and 10 interceptions in starting 10 games and earn himself a decently lucrative 3-year deal with the Titans after the year. Lucrative meaning around $25 million a season. Titans draft a quarterback as well.
Just don't give him guaranteed money now. I'll say this. If Ryan Tannehill averages 280 passing yards for the Titans over 10 games, I will eat the tweet. That is off the charts compared to his pacing for 7 years in Miami. Averaging 280, literally starting 10 games, 2,800 yards passing. I have a real hard time seeing that number over a large sample size, even though in Tennessee, the offensive line's better than what he had in Miami. The skill players are better than what he had in Miami. The running game's probably better than what he had in Miami. I don't foresee that level of production over a sustained period of time, but I can very much see the Titans signing him to a starter money short-term contract. Just don't guarantee him all the money because you want to be able to get out if the Ryan Tannehill from 7 years in Miami ends up showing up in Tennessee. Because to Ryan's credit, he's playing very good right now for the Titans.
Let me ask you this. I have two questions for you. They're yes or no questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is Ryan Tannehill one of the best 32 quarterbacks in the NFL?
Yes.
Is Ryan Fitzpatrick one of the best 32 quarterbacks in the NFL?
Yes.
I agree with you, by the way. They might be 30, 31, but they're one of the
right.
best 32.
Yeah.
Right.
They're bottom of the tier. And I think once teams kind of adjust to Tannehill versus Mariota, it really seems like Tannehill's taking advantage of the fact that, and even for the first half of that game against Tampa, I think at halftime he had like 5 completions for 20 yards and 2 touchdowns. It really took off in the second half for Tennessee and through the air. But I think his stats are a little misleading right now. But he's, like I said, he's playing very well relative to what he played last year in Miami. Last take, Dylan McKeague. Not really a hot take, but just a question. Is Tua injury prone?
Yeah, and I want you to come in on this one because I think it's important that we answer this the best we can, because Tua's had this ankle deal on both feet now, or legs, like, is the ankle part of the foot or the leg? You know this, you're a doctor, right?
Call it the leg.
Okay, so he's had this now on both ankles, this procedure, left and right. And my understanding of the procedure, and I've kind of watched some videos on it, is that it strengthens the ankle and it reduces the possibility that you can have another injury to the ankle. And it's not like he has other problems in it, like the shoulder or anything other than the ankle. He had the same procedure done on both ankles. My understanding is that it makes it less prone to re-injury, but I'd like to hear what you know about it as well.
I think that's fair. I definitely wouldn't say he's injury prone. And I do think he's a player that will have to walk the line for his size narrative, right? I know he measured in at Alabama's junior pro day. Jim Nagy had him check in at just short of 6'1" and like 230 pounds.
That'd be good.
And you watch Tua at the beginning of this offseason or at the beginning of the season, and he sits down with Kirk Herbstreit and he talks about the directive he got from the doctors after the national championship game was stay off your foot as much as possible. So he said he gained a lot of weight. He said he probably gained 10 to 15 pounds, I think, is approximately what he said he had put on. So that would put Tua otherwise in game shape at 6'1", 215, 220. I think that size is fine, but teams are going to want to see you as close to 220 as possible. And that sounds like a really dumb, like, minuscule thing to zero in on, but just knowing the way the draft process works, if Tua as a quote unquote undersized quarterback, because he's not 6'4", comes in at 220, the box will be checked and everybody will be fine with it. But I don't think we've reached the point where we can say he's injury prone. No.
In watching Tua, and I don't know that I have a great answer to this, so I want to hear from you. What have you gathered about his ability to reduce hits, get down when scrambling, and just avoid taking shots? Does he have good spatial awareness or not, in your opinion?
Yeah, he's where he seems to get in trouble is when he's flushed. Obviously, that play against Tennessee when he gets wrapped up from behind and his foot gets rolled up. Mm-hmm. You don't really see that one coming, right? But he's got a really nice sense of sliding within the pocket. Mm-hmm. I was with Ben Solak and our intern Carter Donick watching Alabama offensive line in the national championship game. And even then, in the first quarter of that game, before the hit started piling up, you saw some real nice subtlety from him within the pocket, nuance to set himself up to be able to step into his throws. I think he's really quick in short spaces to be able to step up in the pocket, make that guy off the edge miss. So he's definitely smart with his hits, but he's also not afraid to stand in and take a hit when he needs to. So continuing to be selective with that from his perspective is important, but I like it that if there was ever a silver lining for the ankle injury, it's that this wasn't just, oh, I'm going to stand in the pocket and take a hit. It's, well, it was kind of a weird, fluky play that, like, people get tackled around the legs like that all the time. How often do you see their foot roll out like that? Mm-hmm. It's just kind of a bad luck play for Tua, not something that's like, oh, well, we're going to have a problem here with durability.
Yeah. I appreciate the insight.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. We're done for the day, Joe.
Well, what
takes on takes in the books. Need everybody cross their fingers that I don't blow a gasket over reading all the hot takes after Monday Night Football. There are some doozies out there. Keep your head on a swivel. Appreciate you guys listening to Draft Dudes. Joe, we will be back again tomorrow. Topic to be determined, I believe. Yes?
Yeah, it'll be good, though. Promise you.
Yeah, we're going to cook something special up. And Thursday's Picks Against the Spread, where we look to bounce back from our collective worst week of the year so far, in which we still broke even with 500. Thanks as always for listening to Draft Dudes. We'll talk with you guys again tomorrow.